Yeah, it's, I think we went up there a couple of years ago, so on our anniversary, we thought we'd do it again. Well, let's see, Stuart. You were born in Caledonia, Narga, weren't you? Up in Caledonia? Okay. S-T-U-A-R-T.
A.
A. And it's 1506 National Avenue. And it was 1889 you were born. Do you know what was your date? What's your birthday?
August 17th.
Okay, Caledonia.
Boone County.
And what's your phone number here?
963-9251.
Okay. Okay. Well, we already talked to you once about your willingness to be interviewed. I don't know if you got from the meeting the other night at the Historical Society enough of what we're doing so you understand our program.
No, I really didn't.
Yeah, well, Rockford Public Library was interested in developing an oral history program. Oral history meaning to tape interviews from people who've lived in the community for a long time. And so they asked me if I would switch from the job I did have to doing that full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, I can't do it all myself, you know, all the interviewing. And so I am working with groups in the community. So the Historical Society also had shown an interest a couple of years ago, I think, in doing this. And so we're doing it kind of together. And the Historical Society adopted it as a project of theirs, and I will work with them and train some interviewers, and I hope that your society can find about 10 people in its membership that will be willing to be trained and go out and interview. So we hope to, with the various groups, come up with a couple or 300 tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do transcribe them. This is just a couple of pages of a transcription, but it comes out in that form. And then when we like an hour's worth of tapes are probably 100 pages of typewritten material. So we bind them together and make a what we call a memoir. And then those will be cataloged so that a person coming into the library can find the cards in the card catalog and go to the collection of oral history tapes and transcriptions and be able to read what the person said as well as listen to the tape.
Yeah, now was it your thought that you wanted me to give a sort of a resume of my early life, was that it?
Well, I think there's probably a number of things, Stuart, that you can contribute. I was looking up in the city directories last night, and I discovered that you have been a vice president of a bank, and that you've been a county supervisor, And that was about 1933 that you became president of Hanson Clock Manufacturing Company?
1937.
1937. And I suspect that there are some other things as well that you have done. In fact, your career started out to be electrical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a engineering consultant for a number of years.
Yeah. Just for a year or two, and then I get into other things.
Were you a consultant for individual people or for industries?
Well, for anybody that needed engineering advice.
But there was an electrical field?
Yes, that would be... I did very little, as a matter of fact, on that score, because I was in it so short a time, and then I became involved in other things. Tell me why you pick on me.
I chose you first with the thought that you had had some connection with a furniture company industry in Radford. So that was my first motive in asking you if you would be an interviewer. And I also realized that you were a part of the Scottish community and that you probably have a unique childhood memory of the Scottish community as it was in even before 1900. And there are very few people right now who have that same kind of memory. Well, that's another...
Well, what would you want me to do with that? That knowledge, for example, that I might have?
I would like to come back at another time and ask you some more questions. In fact, I feel that there are enough things in your life that have made it interesting and of value to other people, so that I would rather do a biographical interview of you, which would mean we might spend several hours together, several different times, that is. We might spend a whole session, for instance, on childhood memories and the Scottish community. And I also am aware that you've been interested in the history of that enough so that you've done some research in it yourself. And you would probably be willing to share some of what you learned, even though you don't remember its existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, after you get all that information, then what do you do with it?
Okay, then we type it up in transcript form, such as that small example that I showed you. Then that would become part of the library collection of materials, just as a book would.
With a lot of individuals in the, that would comprise the book? The history of a lot of individuals?
No, we would bind yours, just your story, into one folder. It might turn out to be long enough so that it really is long enough for a book, but it would not be a bound book. It would probably have a soft cover and a tape on the edge. The Historical Society might want a copy of that as well. And then we would keep the tape also,
mm-hmm,
so that anybody in the future, for instance, who wanted to do research on the Scottish community would be able to read what you had written and also to listen to what you said about it.
What I would like to do before I did very much giving you data would know pretty definitely what I was going to say before, because I got into a situation here just recently, and I'm going to be quoted in this new book that's being gotten out now.
We the People?
We the People.
Uh-huh.
Good Lord, they've got a page in there with a picture of me in it. And she just came and sat on my porch one day. That's she was the daughter of the man that owned the Rockford steam boiler plant down here on Kishwaukee Street, and she married a Swede, and she has a Swedish name now. She's one of the gathering. And I just reamed off a lot of stuff there that came to my mind, you know. She had a tape recorder. And, she got them wrong and didn't get the picture the way I would have given it if I had a chance to think about it, you know, and consolidate the thing. And, she had me going to a log cabin schoolhouse up there with 60 kids and one teacher. That was true, however, but I wasn't in a log cabin. But I suppose she just thought that was a good thing to throw in for local color.
Did you have a chance to read
that? No, I didn't have a chance to do anything about it. She finally sent me a copy of it, but heavens, the book had already been set up. I couldn't do a thing. She told about my first marriage to Ann Sheldon, and never mentioned my second marriage at all. It just was a short resume of the early life of the ethnic group. That's what it is. There's a whole bunch of, and I think what she was trying to do was give a picture of the early people that came over here and what they did in the early days. And I told her about John Greenlee. She never put a word in about John Greenlee. And of course, without John Greenlee, there's no story up there. He was the spark plug of the layout. So I was terribly disappointed in the thing, but it's printed now, I suppose.
Really isn't printed, although the rough draft is made.
She sent me this page, and I made the changes on it that I would like to have had made if it were possible. And I sent those back to her. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't know, no. I met yesterday with Mary Ann Aronson, who's the executive secretary of the Bicentennial Commission, and Hal Nelson, who of course was the coordinator of the We the People.
Yeah.
And I have asked Mary Ann to give me a list of those authors, of those people.
Well, this book is going to be delivered on July 7th.
Well, yeah. So you sent it back to that person who interviewed you?
Yeah.
So but you didn't check up, you're not sure? Did she tell you it was too late to make the changes?
No, I haven't heard a word from her since that day on the porch.
Except she sent you the copy.
Just the other day. 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, she might have gotten it there. The changes might have been made, but I'm not in the makings of that at all. Now, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they had interviewed you for that.
Well, I suppose probably I'm as characteristic of the Scottish group that came over in the 1840s as anybody probably now living, but I should have been given a chance to to think about it a little bit rather than just give it off the cuff, you know. And that's why I'm telling you this, so that I don't become involved in something that I will give you that's
Well, what I would say that we're not in any great time bind.
You're not.
My job is to exist through the end of 1976, and so that would be my I would hope to do yours much sooner than that, of course. Yeah.
Furniture Manufacturers Association. Then I was the president of the Red Cross for 1 year. I was president of the University Club for a year, and the other offices as well. And I've been an officer of the Country Club, and I've done so many things that of that nature that I was treasurer of the Second Kind Church for 15 years, and I've given many, many hours to that sort of thing, which I have. Oh, I was the first president of the Black Hawk Area Council of Boy Scouts, and was president for 4 years then, way back in the Depression days. And I was president of the Municipal Sanitarium for 10 years and served on the board for many more. I was on the Board of Supervisors for 8 years. And I've given a lot of time on things of that kind for which I've been tremendously well paid. That has been the joy of my life, to have given that time and to lend a hand in the community life of in which I live. So that's business affairs don't thrill me nearly as much as the things that president of the gun club up there. The first 2 or 3 years I was a member, they gave me the works and put me through every job they had every successive year. And I've enjoyed that association tremendously up there, and do shoot every year with the gang. That's a real pleasurable outing with a bunch of swell guys, and I enjoy that tremendously. You never hear an hear a story that's off color. Never one. And they know what's going on more than about any group I go in with, and they're interested in what's going on. So many people are interested in the small things, small talk and that sort of thing, but up there you get a lot of comment from different fellows that shows you they certainly know what's going on. And they're great thinkers and all that. So
you see, you do have a great deal.
I was elected to this, service. I was given the Service Above Self Honor at Rotary 3 or 4 years ago, for these things I've been talking about. They pick out 4 or 5 people in the community, not necessarily Rotarians. As a matter of fact, there's usually only 1 or 2 Rotarians, but they pick up people who have given a lot of their time to these things that I have. So.
Mm-hmm. And it is true that in this kind of interviewing, we're probably less interested in and your children and their lives than what you've done.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So this, the children were there. I had to write a list of the stuff that I became involved in for the Rotary Award. And I probably could do that up and show the things that I have been interested in a social way. Like things I mentioned to you. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that are meaningful, I think, in anybody's life. The humdrum of business is something else. Although I think it's a very interesting experience in business. One of them was starting the Roscoe Electric Company to supply electricity to the Argyle community eventually, and they got a big thrill out of that. That was before you were born, I guess. That was back in 1926 and 7. We had 14 towns finally tied together. We supplied those towns with electricity like the Commonwealth Edison does here now. As a matter of fact, we sold out to the Commonwealth, to the Rockford Electric Company later on. And then I bought a hydroelectric plant out in Idaho and went out there and spent a couple of years building. That plant was terribly run down, and I rehabilitated that plant and got it loaded up and sold it to a big utility company in California. So those have been silly things.
Yeah, that was in 1920.
We sold it in 29. We sold it in the spring of 1929.
In the Idaho. So you were out there like in 1927 then.
We sold the Roscoe Electric Company in 1927. And then I think I bought that one in the summer of 1927 out in Idaho and sold it in 29. But I went out there and rebuilt the plant myself physically with men that were on the job. That was a lot of fun to see that thing develop and see these gold mines ask for more and more power and see the plant get loaded to the roof and then interest a big utility company in its ownership and we sold it. And I came back and bought the Hanson Clock Company.
That was quite a change too, from hydroelectric
entirely
to
entirely. But you see, business is the same regardless of what business it is. I mean, I bought the Hanson Clock Company with excellent workmen in the plant. Well, my job was to get the financing necessary to run the plant, and then also to get them an organization to sell the stuff after we made it. And that isn't really much of any part of the running of the business per se. For instance, here's an example. When I was out in Idaho, this little plant supplied energy to about 8 or 10 towns in the vicinity. Pioneerville, Placerville, and all names that reek of mining. And these people were all miners that lived there. And this electric company, this hydroelectric company that was supplying light to these towns, was charging 20 cents a kilowatt. And I thought, well, this outfit is prohibiting the people from buying the thing they have for sale. And so when water flows through the water wheels, it doesn't make any difference doesn't cost any more to have the wheels loaded than it does to have them a third loaded. So I went down to the commission, the Idaho Commerce Commission one day, and I walked into the office, and the great, big, tall, white-haired man came out and said, "Well, young man, what can I do for you?" I was about 30, you know. And I said, "Well, I would like to change the rates of the Idaho, of the Grimes Fast Power Company." He said, "What?" He says, "Don't you realize that that would take 6 or 8 months to change the rate on a utility company?" Well, I said, he said, "When did you want to put these rates into effect?" And he said, "I wanted to put them in next month." "No, there's no chance." He says, "How much did you want to raise the rates?" "I didn't want to raise the rates. I want to cut the rates from 20 to 10 cents a kilowatt hour." He said, "Well, now, young man, this is no place for tomfoolery. This is a place of business." And I said, "Well, here's this plant running up there, and whether it runs full or half full, doesn't cost 1 cent more. And the way it is now, I'm preventing the people of buying the thing that I've got for sale." He says, "Well, well, that's a new one on me." And he said, "I think if you'd come around tomorrow morning, we'd have the rate all set for you, so you could set it in force this month."
This month, huh?
This same month that I wanted to put it in. It only makes a difference for the politician, you know, whether the rates to go up or down. So these are just some of the sidelights of the things I run into in the business.
And that's a very delightful story.
It's an interesting
story. And told very well.
I went to a cocktail party, and it will met in connection with this graduation thing. And I ran into one of the men there that I was a total stranger, and I thought, "Gee, I'm an old man going there and stand in the corner and nobody will even notice me." But I met a couple of people, and then the people that were giving the party, their name was Strom. And before the day was over, I found out that he was the son of A.J. Strom of Belvedere. Well, that was something. Then I got to talking to this other man. He was a lawyer.
And in Belvedere?
No.
Oh, he was not lawyer. Strom.
He was at this party at Strom's house. And I got to talking with him, and I finally said, "What is your business?" And he said, "I'm a lawyer." I said, "I suppose your office is downtown." "Yeah," he says, "it is. I'm with the firm of Chapman and Cutler." Oh boy, I said, "If that doesn't bring back memories." I said, "Chapman and Cutler handled this plant I had out in Idaho. They took care of all
really? It.
With Frank Welsh here in Rockford and Bill Radebaugh of Chapman and Cutler, they handled the whole thing." And then I got to tell him the story about cutting the rate from 20 to 10. And you know, as a matter of fact, that's just what happened. Those people out there began to use twice as much, so they got twice as much use of electricity, and I had just as much income without costing me a cent. And it was just that simple, I mean. So it worked out that way. Well, anyway, those are some of the things that I have. This page that is coming out in the book, at least the one they sent to me, has a big picture of me showing the I have a chart of the family tree of all the Ralstons in the community up there, ever since the community started. It's always been interesting to me to know how they fitted in together, if at all.
Did you do that yourself, or number of people worked on it?
Mary Henderson, her grandfather, Robert Henderson, had it started, and then she gave me a copy, and then I started from there, and I got, I think I've got every family in the Scotch settlement and what their connection is with each other. And it's a tremendous thing. It takes the whole dining room table to lay it out on it. But it's very interesting, and they've got a picture of me pointing to this thing laid out on the table.
Oh. And this, but you don't like the picture?
Oh, sure. I like the thing. And the story, most of the things that is in the story is correct. But they've left some salient points out that's always brought in.